Allegedly.
Blog Talk Radio.
Every author has a one story that hits close to home for them. This is Yvonne Mason's.
This book is very personal to me.
The 50s has been idealized as a time of prosperity and growth for some. Those with mental and physical challenges often faced scorn and ridicule, and were destined to be left in so-called hospitals to wither and die. Dreamcatcher, Failure Was Never an Option, is the uplifting story of a man named Stan and his family's courage to defy the odds and succeed in an era where no merit was seen in the challenged.
It is the true story of my brother who was mentally and physically challenged. It is because of my brother Stan that I am a successful author.
Dreamcatcher, Failure Was Never an Option, is available through Amazon and BarnesandNoble.com now.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Guess what? It is Saturday night. And no, we're not at the movies. And yes, that was a song. But that being said, this is Off the Chain. I am your host, Yvonne Mason. And yes, that was a piece of shameless promotion. It is my book, Dreamcatcher, Failure Was Never an Option. And that book is the reason I am successful, as the ad by my friend Chris Dunham states. And if everybody needs a good ad man, and he is it. I'm going to tell you, this man is fantastic. He does all of my voiceover ads, and I couldn't ask for a better ad man because he knows exactly how to do it, when to do it, and how to do it. So if you were looking for a good ad man, he also has his own show on Friday nights called the Friday Night Freak Show, and he can also do an ad for you, and he will play it on his show. So contact him. He's on my page. Contact him and tell him I sent you and get him to do some work for you. Tonight, I'm bringing back an author that has been here before, as I do all of my guests, because I firmly believe that one time is not something that helps my guest. You bring them back over and over, and they gain a following on this show. It happens. I learned that trick from watching the old Johnny Carson shows, and what Johnny would do is he would bring his guests back, and then 3 or 4 months down the road, he'd bring them back again, and what he would do is as he brought them back, he would put them later in the show, and it was like a hook to keep you watching the show until that guest came on. So this is what I do. I bring my guests back, number one, because I appreciate them so much. They work very hard at their craft, and number two, it's another avenue for them to get out there and be heard, because this show, ladies and gentlemen, is heard all over the world now, literally all over the world, even in places I never heard of. As on this show alone, just this show, not the podcast, this show, as of this morning, we have 3,028 listeners. And the most listeners that we get are out of Australia. So for all of my Aussie friends, thank you so much for your support. We appreciate it. Now, when you add the podcast into the count, we are at 7,860 listeners. That is 2,140 listeners away from my goal of 10,000 listeners. This show has not even been on a year yet. Won't be a year until July 29th. And we are already very close to 10,000 listeners with all the podcast and with the show itself. I could not be more pleased, and I am pleased, not for myself, because this show is not about me. Yeah, I do my shameless ads, but it's about the people that I want to see succeed. It's about my guest, and I appreciate them so much, and I'm so humbled that they're willing to spend an hour of their time with me. And it encourages me, and it keeps me happy to be able to bring them back and see them get a following on the show and see them do well, because I'm only as successful as they are. They are the driving force behind this show. I'm just, as our new president says, I'm just the messenger. I'm just the facilitator. So tonight I have brought back author Gary Starda, and he is a former journalist who has studied English and journalism at the University of Massachusetts in Amherst. His love for science fiction compelled him to write his first novel, What Are You Made Of?, published in 2006. So he's been publishing about as long as I have. Inspired by Isaac Asimov, the science fiction novel focuses on intelligent artificial life and whether sentient androids should possess the same rights as humans. Now, not only that, but he also has published a Caitlin Diggs series and a few other things. But tonight, he is here to tell us about a new release, which I find very interesting. And I'm going to open up the phone lines because he's got a question for our listeners. So I'm going to open up the phone lines. The number is 516-387-1756. And when he asks this question, you'll understand the reason behind it. The name of the book is I Bought the Sun for a Dollar. And I saw that title and I went, okay, has Gary gone into children's books? Which is fine. There's nothing wrong with that. But it just didn't sound like him. Well, when I asked him a while ago, Gary, what is the age for this book? He says 18 and over. And I said, and I'm going to ask him again, after I introduce him, what made him possess to write this book. So welcome, my friend. I'm so glad you're back.
Hey, yeah, thanks, Yvonne, and I really appreciate you having me. It is a tough road and a promotional road, you know, to get the word out there about your book. So I have another one that just came out this week, and as you were saying, it's kind of out of the box, and that's what I always kind of intended to do. I didn't want to stay in one kind of niche, so I'm kind of really kind of glad to hear that you didn't know, like, what you're like, what is this? Like, this is outside the realm of what I've been doing. Yeah, and I kind of in the back of my mind, you know, when I start first writing that, I just wanted to stay like an out-of-the-box type of author, even though I primarily lean to science fiction and mystery. Whatever idea comes to me, I'm up for it to bring it up.
And,
there,
and that
so,
is an excellent way to be, because I have been reading since I was old enough to put words together and form sentences. And what I found with traditional authors, because they are under such stress by the Big Six, whichever big one of the Big Six they're published by, they have to put a book out like once every 6 months. So they just regurgitate the characters with a different name, a different plot, and a different city, but it's the same storyline.
I was just talking to that with my editor on that. That was a recent book that we're doing that we didn't really care for those series that go on for like 35 books, and it's like the same character.
You go, okay, read that book. No, read that book. Well, it's got a new title, but no, read that book. And you want something fresh and new and out of the box and something totally off the wall from what you're used to reading by a particular author. That's what keeps the author interesting. That's why, like you, I write whatever comes to mind. And I can do some really strange things. But this is I Bought the Sun for a Dollar. Now, before we talk about the book, what in the world possessed you to go in to write that book and in the direction that you took it?
Yeah, that is a good question. You know, after all is said and done, and it's been a while since I've wrote it, you know, that's an interesting question for me. I think maybe because I had some personal experiences, relocating to a different state, starting over, kind of in my life, I think maybe that was a little bit of the basis of the main characters kind of going through. But I think I was also probably at the time listening to some shows, doing some reading on how the planets affect us, and was just wondering about that idea, you know, can someone really feel this effect in a really tangible way from, you know, an outside force that maybe, you know, gives them some kind of light to hang on to, even though they're going through a lot of negative things. So I thought that would be pretty fascinating, and I even hope that even my personal self, that I can latch onto something like that, because that's a very hard thing to do. And even when this character does happen to stumble upon this discovery, you know, it's almost like people don't either want to believe it, or there's something nefarious about it, or as in this book, which becomes even a satirical type of book, where there's this data mining organization that's seen him on the internet talk about this, and they feel that this might be a threat, that happiness could be a threat, you know, because it's basically, it takes away from the control of the powers to be in a little way. If someone finds its own personal happiness and starts spreading it, you know, who knows what could happen. So I was thinking of it in a satirical way, you know, maybe, you know, like a big brother would kind of step in and try to monitor it and say, you know, what's
that
up with this? We don't
sense.
Want this.
That
so, yeah, there's a little bit
sense.
Dark humor. Yeah, yeah. So a little bit of everything kind of going on in this. And it's speaking outside the box, I just looked on Amazon. It's basically categorized under contemporary and literary and literature, which I've never been categorized under. So I don't know. Who knows? So it is a new territory.
And ladies and gentlemen, the reason we want to open up the phone lines at 516-387-1756 is the burning question that Gary has something happened in your life that maybe you felt was affected by solar flares, astrology, the full moon, the sun? Now, we do know that because our bodies are 70% water, that the moon does affect us when it does go full. We know it affects the tides, the rivers, and the lakes. And we also know that more babies are born during a full moon, and we also know that more crime is committed during a full moon. Do these criminals turn into werewolves? I would venture to say some of them maybe think they do. But because we are 70% water, the moon does affect our moods, women especially.
Yeah, I would tend to agree to that. So I'm wondering, you know, if any of the listeners out there, you know, feel some of that, you know, presence, or, you know, either whether it affected their mood or feeling for a particular time, or even made them make a certain decision that may have changed their whole lives because of something that was, you know, kind of intangible as far as us. You know, we know those planets and everything is out there, but they're kind of intangible to us here, you know, as we're stuck gravity bound to Earth, and, you know, we really don't see and feel them like being out in space, obviously. So, I think that's very interesting. As anybody, you know, come across that and found out that, you know, affected them profoundly in their mood or feelings, I'd like to hear that.
Well, would it not be safe to say, before we talk about the research you did, because I know you had to do some research, but just based on everyday movement and everyday being, that our mood is affected by the sun or the lack of it. I know that even though I live in Florida and it's perpetually sunny 99% of the time, those days that it is cloudy and overcast and rainy and dreary looking outside, it depresses me. I can't stand it because I lived in Georgia, and that's what winter was all the time, and it drove me crazy. So the sun definitely affects us.
Hmm. Yeah, right now I'm on the, I don't know what side of Florida you're on, I'm on the Tampa side. And actually having a few days here, at least last day or so, that's kind of like been a surprise, where it's been kind of more wintry, kind of gray. Personally, that doesn't really, I don't know, really doesn't affect me too much in my mood, but I could see where it would affect some people, definitely. I mean, people who live in places like Seattle where it's always raining, I mean, that's proven to affect them. Or even like in England or something, you know, it's always overcast. Definitely affects moods.
Yeah, it's because sun is, to me, the sun is a life form. The sun is what warms us when we're cold. It's what makes the food grow. It makes the flowers bloom.
Right.
It makes the birds sing. So it's a life form within itself. So I would venture to say, yeah, it probably has affected a few people. Ladies and gentlemen, if y'all want to weigh in on this, the number is 516-387-1756, because we are very interested in hearing what you have to say. when you wrote this book, Gary, what all did you go and do research on to make it believable?
Yeah, it was some books and radio shows that I've heard. You mentioned solar flares. That's also in this book. And that's a very real possibility. I mean, even though that sun is 93 million miles away, or you know, how far away it is from us, it has influence not only in the light it sends us, vitamins it sends us. It can affect us in certain negative ways, too, with our skin. But there's also that idea of the solar flares and the way we're set up now in our society, totally electronically dependent. If those solar flares hit us in a certain way, it can definitely knock out our power grids. And that would have more than just a passing, you know, personal story to tell of how, you know, something affected us. So, I mean, that would affect everybody in not so good a way. So
yeah,
that's also brought up in. So I was really interested in the solar flare end of it too, and you know, what could happen. And so it's kind of ironic that this character, Timothy, where he finds the sun to be a blessing for him, also by the end of the book also kind of discovers that, you know, there's also a thorn, there's also a dangerous side to this very object that he's gazing upon and kind of, well, not so much worshiping, but in a little way. I mean, not so much as in the ancient way. He's not like, you know, out there making sacrifices or something. But, you know, it's really interesting if you go back in history and everything with the gods and like Ra for, you know, Egypt and everything and sun gods. I mean, that's a whole other story. But I thought, you know, looking at it in a modern time, you know, what would its effect be?
Did you study how the planets might affect us and the whole thing with astrology? And because it used to be way back when you had astrologists and people that did astronomy in the king's court.
Yes.
And everything that the king did was built on their predictions based on the sun, the moon, and the stars.
Right. And now, if, you know, someone said that, they would say it's ridiculous. But, you know, I mean, it's kind of like a battle between science, like you're saying, and those old beliefs. Science sometimes fighting it, but also I was just online and looking at an article where science was actually at least tying together that the planets affect the sun, affect the magnetic field in some way. So even the scientists are coming around to the idea of how that's affecting us. And like you said, with the moon and especially with the tides and the water, how that affects us all, that pull on us. And, you know, if that pull is on us, you know, if it's pulling us along, especially our minds when a full moon is out, you know, who knows what can happen with that.
And so, it's all in sync. And the planets are all in sync with each other and with the sun and with the moon. And if that magnetic field is broken, or like you say, a solar flare hits one of our grids, it wouldn't just knock out our power. It would knock out water. It would knock out vehicles. It would knock out telephones. It would knock out our computers. It would knock out gas stations. It would knock out NASA. It would knock out our Homeland Security, our airplanes. And that's a very real thing to think about.
Yeah, and we're kind of really vulnerable because they're saying, all I've heard over the years, every time I've listened to this, you know, at least 5 years or more on this topic, and still nothing's being done to protect the power grids. I don't know why we're taking that risk, taking that chance when it's probably more likely that something like that can happen than us being hit by an asteroid or something, which would be, you know, equally terribly, could have an equal terribly effect. So I think even though more people will tune into this, maybe we'll have some of those changes and at least get some protection.
That would be an excellent idea because it
right.
It could happen. Anything is possible because Mother Nature has her own wicked sense of humor.
Yeah.
So this in your book, Timothy, or Tim,
right.
has this life-changing experience.
Right.
Now, does he credit or blame this experience on the sun or on Mother Nature or on circumstances?
Well, I mean, he's coming out of negative experiences and he's initially coming, literally finding his light in this. I'm going to do a reading from one of the chapters where he actually stumbles upon it. So maybe that'll make it more clear. But it's something that he's excited about. He wants to tell other people about it. He goes on the internet to tell other people about it. And he feels he kind of owes the universe like a payment for finding this. So that's kind of how it comes across that, you know, it's kind of like putting a dollar in a jar. That's why that title comes to be like, I bought the sun for a dollar, because basically he feels he found something really incredible at a bargain, basically.
Do your reading and let's discuss it and see if we can't get into this, because this is exciting.
Okay, great. I'm glad you feel that way. So this is the part in the book where Timothy has yet again had another negative experience. Two robbers have tried to come into his home to steal some things, and he comes home and he finds it, the mess. And for the next day or so, he's kind of feeling tuned in to these people, whoever they were, that came into his house, like even in his dreams. And he swears he hears voices. So this is where it comes up in this chapter, that he's kind of thinking that he can still catch whoever these people are that broke into his home. So I'm going to read from chapter 3. Timothy responded to a faint sound in his sleep. It was distant, and it caused him to turn. His hearing attuned to the discord, it was the dam giggling again. Forcing his eyes open, he listened intently. No sound other than the clock ticking. Then a cat cried. Tossing his covers off, he slipped into slippers, grabbed a flashlight from a drawer, and bounded out his kitchen door. They've got to be there. They even startled the neighborhood cat. Timothy chugged along, breathing heavy, stabbing pain shooting through his barely protected feet. I'll get you, you bastards. It was still dark, and a few lights were on in the houses across the woods, peering at him like eyes. He surmised it was early morning. His alarm hadn't gone off yet. Fuck it. It was his usual catchphrase lately for everything, whether it was burnt toast or another bill he feared he couldn't pay. Timothy heard a stir in the woods to his right. He smiled, but it wasn't happiness that flashed across his face. He was invested in catching the bastards. His job be damned. He'd take a sick day. Why worry about serving out his last few days for a company that was shipping American jobs to India? The hunt continued, Timothy fumbling in the darkness. He nearly fell over a rock, but grabbed a thin tree trunk to regain immediate purchase. Leaves chattered underneath his feet as if they were cheering him on. A bird of some kind wailed from above, mimicking human language as if a parrot. Timothy's mind filled in what he thought the bird might be saying. Over there, over there. The pursuit continued until Timothy entered a small clearing. Trees and rocks circled the barren ground as if they respected it. Flashing his light on the ground, Timothy wondered about the unusual spot. Maybe it was just his mind getting the better of him, but he imagined some kind of ritual taking place. Perhaps his intruders were into some kind of craft. Maybe they burned things in this circle. It was a horrifying thought, and Timothy imagined the stray neighborhood cat possibly falling victim. No, you'll pay for your crimes. Desperate, Timothy shined his flashlight this way and that with no regard to the beam's influence and that it was entering into homes across the way. A few more lights clicked on in the homes, more eyes focusing on his crazed witch hunt. Okay, why aren't you helping me? Timothy's face soured. He realized it was a selfish notion. What did these distant neighbors have to do with his robbery and decaying lifestyle? At that instant, Timothy recalled a phrase he heard in church as a boy. It was about helping yourself. If you helped yourself, you'd be helped. He wasn't quite sure if it was even a phrase. He'd become disenchanted with religion and Kevin teased him about his agnostic stance on more than one occasion. One conversation became very heated. "Well, how on the earth do you think the birds, bees, and the plants got here? There's a grand design, even right down to the beer you're swilling." They didn't speak for a few days. Timothy had been taught to believe in evolution over creation. And right now, Timothy is standing alone in the woods. Timothy began to consider a third option, an intentional design possibly initiated by a creator, such as a god, or maybe some grand purveyor of the universe, which interweaved with everything and everyone, but remained invisible and shapeless. Kevin might even have an explanation for this, but Kevin wasn't here at the moment to ease his despondency. "I'd like your assistance right about now. Not that I won't do my part." Timothy shrugged his shoulders and clicked off the light. The beginning rays of dawn were cascading over the wooded area. Some spots glistened from the golden rays, and it appeared as if the leaves were on fire, glowing gold like small treasures. It was grand, possibly a grand design after all, just as Kevin said. What power the sun had, turning darkness into light. Maybe he hadn't really noticed or appreciated it before because he was always dashing off to work, annoyed and immersed in traffic and other mundane ventures. But where were the girls? He was certain he heard them, not in his sleep, but in his waking moments. His hand gripped the flashlight tighter with determination. Maybe they couldn't exist in the light and were with vermin who needed to scurry back into the dark, concealed vestige. If so, it was a small moment of victory for Timothy Ray. He took comfort in thinking the evil couldn't enjoy the golden moments of light. He dropped his flashlight and raised his hand skyward, inviting the light to wash over him. He mocked himself after a moment. "Well, if this isn't self-love, I don't know what is." He chuckled. "If Kevin could see me, he still wouldn't believe it." Timothy walked with purpose back home, confident he had chosen a new, informed path. Maybe not literally, but figuratively. He felt transformed and wondered if the cackle of the girls was not a taunt, but an invitation, in some roundabout way, to write his journey. Everything happens for a reason. It was another favorite line of Kevin's, who believed in synchronicity and that there were no coincidences. Attuned to light, love, and hope, Timothy entered his bedroom and rummaged through a drawer where his phone and iPad resided, switched off for the night. His ex had taken the big screen TV and computer. He reflected it was for the better because if she had left them, the robbers would have stolen them. No coincidences. He still had the means to connect with the outside world despite everything that happened, and Timothy was determined to make use of it. He Googled, searching for every fact he could find about the sun. It was almost 93 million miles away, but people had to wear sunscreen because its glorious rays were determined to reach them, no matter what. It gave us vitamins. It even gave us the intangible. It was a favorite metaphor for hope. It was too glorious to be ignored, so Timothy set his mind to earning it. He wondered how he could make a connection being so far away. Then he recalled people paid to have star systems named after them. It seemed a ridiculous idea, people paying for something they really couldn't own. How could anybody own faraway objects in the sky? He scratched at the stubble on his chin. Maybe it wasn't so crazy because it gave the owner some kind of hope or gratification that they were connected to the grandness of the universe. Timothy cupped his hands together as if in prayer. "I know I don't have much to offer. I would have liked to buy the sun for a small sum. Would a dollar do?" Sun glinted through the window and onto his bedspread before disappearing. Timothy took it as a sign, a cosmic nod. "It was a pleasure doing business with you." The private negotiation would not suffice. Timothy needed to tell the world. What better way to self-broadcast than the social media sensation called Livestream? He posted, "I'm feeling great today. I just got a great deal on a wondrous light for just a dollar." As soon as Timothy posted the declaration, he felt anxious. Was it a good idea to broadcast the selling price? Now everyone would want what he bought. He read his post again and smiled. He had been cryptic, never referencing the sun by name. A reply to his post appeared a few seconds later. "Sounds great. Wishing you all the success the day may bring." The post was by someone named Maggie, a woman he barely recalled befriending on the site. Wow! Timothy rubbed his hands together. Already people were sending him positive messages, near strangers at that. Timothy phoned into work, made a veggie smoothie, and changed into fresh clothing. When he returned to Livestream, he was notified that 53 people had responded to his post. Lightheaded, he scrolled through the comments. "Some light. I wish I had bought it. Can I go shopping for you? I can't find anything for a dollar, even at the dollar store." "May the blessed light wash over you, Timothy. May the light be as glorious as you can imagine it to be." Timothy couldn't place the responders as anyone he had ever corresponded with prior. He vaguely recalled befriending them, but nothing other than a passing hello was ever said between them. suddenly and miraculously, all these positive people were on his side for a change. If only his ex could witness this. For a moment, he played with the idea of posting his message on her livestream page. That is, if she had already deleted him from her life network. The responses made him rethink. He should have been generous with his new find. I guess I seized the day. Timothy clapped his hands together. It was a gesture he hadn't made since he was a teen in reaction to some new experience he was introduced to when life really was a joyous adventure. Okay, I'm going to wrap that up there.
That's amazing.
Okay, well, so on.
That is absolutely, because the whole time you're reading it, I am thinking of all of these life's lessons just in that one chapter. You have despair, you have anger, denial, thoughts of insanity, then you have thoughts of hopelessness, but then you have hope. And with that hope comes other things. It came full circle. He went home. He said that he had found something and bought it for a dollar, and then all of a sudden he has all these people that he's never talked to before. It's a whole new bevy of friends that he has collected,
right,
simply because he has hope.
Yep, and that's really a good life lesson that he has, and he really needs it that time because everything's really collapsing on him like a deck of cards at that point. I mean, to top it off, he didn't have enough bad things going, but some people were going to break into his home. And anybody who wants to pick up the book will find that those people are integrated right into the story, those two people. Hello?
That is an absolutely amazing chapter just within itself. Ladies and gentlemen, we have opened the phone lines at 516-387-1756. Call us and chat with us. In fact, we have...
Can you hear me, Yvonne?
Yeah, I can.
Okay, great. That's the line. Cut out. Sorry about that.
That's okay.
Speaking
I'm going,
of,
why do I have Gary with two... Did you think I'd lost you?
Yeah, we're talking about all those electrical interruptions, and there we go. There's one right there.
But that one chapter is just, it's breathtaking. Because I can see this man,
yeah.
He's in total despair because I guess everything in his life turned to shit overnight. His wife left him, she took everything. Apparently he's not happy at his job, and then he gets robbed, and then he's hearing these voices in his sleep, and he's going to go catch them, and just you've done a really, really good job with that. Now I got to go buy the book.
All right, cool.
Just I have found that in most people will agree that if we read something or we hear something with an open mind, and that's the clue, with an open mind, that we're bound to learn something, whether it's on television, whether it's in a book, whether it's fiction, nonfiction, we can always manage to learn something if we read that something with an open mind. And in listening to that one chapter with an open mind, I learned an awful lot in just that one chapter. If the rest of the book is as powerful as that chapter, you should have no problem selling that book.
Well, I really hope so. If people are interested, they want to go and read the book. When he's talking about the people who were trying to break into his home, he actually ends up meeting them. And even though it was a negative experience that happened, it kind of pushed him into the woods for that other experience. So it was kind of like just everything kind of all connected. So, you know, even with feeling a connection with the outside forces, also I think that just the circumstances of meeting other people greatly affect you. So, if anybody is listening has anything experiences like that they want to call in about, that would be good to hear too.
Absolutely. Well, you know that it doesn't matter what we do in our life, where we go, who we see, who we talk to, who we even pass by on the street. We leave a part of ourselves with that person, and we bring a part of that person with us. So in your book, that comes across as well, because when he connected, all he put up was that one simple sentence, and he left a part of himself on the internet, and those people responded in kind, and when they responded in kind, they left a part of themselves, which gave him a whole new perspective about himself and life in general.
Yep. I'm glad that you interpreted that way when I read it, because that's exactly what I was trying to, sum up and go for, in a nutshell. So I'm glad it was clear to you.
Yeah, very clear. And also, yeah. I don't believe in coincidences. I believe that there is a grand scheme of things, and everything in our life happens for a reason. Sometimes we don't know what that reason is, but there is a big picture. And when we try to fight against that big picture or not understand there is a big picture, we hurt ourselves. And I'm not saying just lay down and let the world roll over us, but I'm saying that things happen for a reason.
Yeah, I think so, because, even in that thread I was talking about in my personal life where these events happened and I end up moving from the Northeast and relocating down to Florida, that was certainly definitely, it's in my mind of a pattern that would, even though it seemed really random and strewn all over the place at the time, it was like a path in itself. So I think so. I think people, if they look at events in their life, may connect that too.
And sometimes we have to make a change in our life in order to take a different path to get us where we need to be, because we get so stuck in our own rut that we cannot get out of our own way to make those changes, because most of us are very much creatures of habit, and most of us don't like change.
Yeah, that's definitely true. And, so this character really has to go through change big time. And now he's going to find, even though he's willing and he's opened himself up to this belief, he's going to face, some aftermath of it. And right away he's going to face aftermath when he meets this character right after this chapter, where he thinks he's found this new kind of like love interest. And this woman has ulterior motives, based on his discovery. So I'm hoping that people will find that intriguing too as the story goes along, and it kind of gets into a little bit of like a, kind of like a satire on how society might look on something like this.
And the things that we perceive to be are not always the things that they are. And I think that will come through in your book as well. Our perception of things are not always what they really are, but we put that perception out there, and we expect everybody else to fall in line too.
Right.
Now,
so
go ahead. No, you go ahead.
No, I was just saying, I know, the topic of your the book that you have, and it's like a personal experience. So I know that, that must be definitely a changing path for you. That has to be. So I think, I think everybody has something along the line.
Well, it was, because my little brother, who wasn't supposed to do anything except sit in a corner and vegetate for the rest of his life, taught me more than I could ever teach him, because he doesn't believe in failure. Failure is never an option with him. So he'll just go headlong into things and just do them because he can. And when we say, Stanley, why'd you do that? Because I can. So, and this to me is what your character is getting ready to do. Because he can now, he's found a purpose. The sun did come up. It did warm him. There is a grand scheme. There is a path to take. Now he has to grab the bull by the horns and go take that path.
Yep, and he has people around him, you know, that's going to push him along that path, some hindrance as he goes along. He has that friend, Kevin, that he was talking about, and he's also going to come along to meet a professor who teaches astronomy, and she always had beliefs of, like, in Eastern ways that she can't really come out and teach in her classes because they're kind of looked upon as more astrological than astronomical. So she is really quite interesting, too. So by the end, these characters all kind of reflect off each other, and we'll see what happens at the end, if he can really retain his hope that he had, despite what he's going to be asked to go through.
And you made a very poignant statement that is very true, in that we do reflect off of each other. We reflect whatever that person in front of us is, their attitude, their personality, their station in life. It bounces off of us, and if we are, as your character, as a sensitive soul, we pick up on that. So it's very important, I think, to always try to have a positive outlook on life, because you don't know whose life you might be saving that day.
Right. And, it's just funny, like, what you're saying, because I'm thinking about the characters in the book, and another character kind of will get affected by this, too, even though she was in a very negative path herself. So, yeah, just hoping that everybody will enjoy that and maybe just see something maybe in their lives, someone they know, relate to it, and hopefully enjoy it, too, because, I mean, basically, bottom line, it's basically entertainment, too. So when I get all those mixed in, I want to, you know, give people something to think about still being an entertainment idea. But I want it to be something that, you know, can really all still be plausible without having a science fiction element in it. And I think that has been achieved, because even, like you said, the solar flares, that could happen. There are definite real possibility. That's not science fiction.
No, and how many of us have been out somewhere or done something or even just been at home or in the car, and we've had all this weighing on us, and we've been down in the bottom of that well, and then all of a sudden we have this epiphany. And that's what he had. He had an epiphany that
right.
It's going
to
be okay.
To
yeah. I think you have done an excellent, excellent job. I, for one, can't wait to read it and just dive into it and learn some life's lessons myself. So... Right. Thank you for publishing that. And ladies and gentlemen, it is I Bought the Sun for a Dollar by Gary Starter. And it's just been released. Go to Amazon. No, you can't go right now. You've got to wait until the show's over. But go to Amazon and order it and read it with an open mind and enjoy it, laugh, cry, do whatever, and get your life's lessons and enjoy it for entertainment. Now, you've got a new one coming out.
Yep, there's another one that's going to follow this. I'm hoping by at least March. This has been a project that began about May of last year. It involves my detective, Stanford Carter. And he has some big changes in his life going on, too. He's a Bostonian by nature, and he was a detective, homicide detective for many years there. But he's asked to actually take on a new challenge and totally uproot himself to go to New York City, where he's going to join the FBI. So he has some real changes going on in his life, so to speak, too. Carter is a character that he's tried to base himself in Zen and meditation to deal with his work that he does. And maybe sometimes he's too immersed in it to, to be really involved in real life. So he is kind of like in a yin-yang situation with his wife, Jill Seacrest, who is works in forensics, and she is kind of like more off the hip, off the shooting, off the hip type of character than he is. And I think they both kind of reflect off each other. So I think that's another great adventure for them. I like to see this book, even though it has big overtones for being not only a murder book, but a conspiracy book. I like it mainly to overlook at myself as a character-driven book. So I'm hoping that the characters will really catch on. So that book should be out in about March. Again, that'll be out in Amazon and everywhere else.
And yes, ladies and gentlemen, he will be back. We're going to launch the book on this show, so he's going to let me know when it's getting ready to come so that I can set up the show and get him back on here, because this character sort of sounds like Gary himself. Because think about it, Gary. You wrote, I bought the son for a dollar, and then this new one is getting to come out, and they both have the same theme of a change was in the wind. And that had to have been sort of cathartic to you from moving from New England to sunny Florida, where it's the strange and unusual and the old come to die.
Yeah, that's definitely a cultural change.
And we don't get in the heart.
I guess places are like, characters too in themselves, maybe, with the influence they have on us. So I'm hoping people will enjoy that. The other two preceding books people have seemed to like from the reaction I've got. And I think this is going to be a lot more kind of media book for us, delving more into the characters, their development, how they're changing. So I kind of like that, even though it's, in one hour it said it's done, it's a murder mystery book, but I wanted to have it very strong in the characters as well. So anyway, that's going to continue with that one. And then I'm not going to, stray away from sci-fi. That's my love. So I'm going to be continuing on with that. I have a couple more books in stock, in hand, that need to come out. And those, so I think there's probably going to be at least even one more book after that this year, if not two.
Please.
That will come out.
Very
so,
please. You've just become a regular on the show. Now, real quick, I have my notes in front of me, so correct me if I'm wrong. The first two in the Sanford Carter series is Murder by Association and Kindred Killers, correct? Okay, ladies and gentlemen,
exactly.
go back and read those two books real quick. No, you can't go now. You got to wait till after the show. But get those two books, because the third one, The Killing Collective, is coming out end of March, 1st of April, and we'll launch it on this show. But also get I Bought the Sun for a Dollar. I'm telling you, after that reading of that chapter, I have to get that book. Now, let me ask you this. When you moved from New England, which is a culture unto itself, to sunny Florida, which is not only a culture unto itself, but it is a mixture of north and south and east and west and just a whole conglomeration of people, was it a culture shock? Did you have a hard time acclimating to your new place of living?
Well, maybe not so much, because I went from England actually then to New Jersey, then was down to Florida. But I found that, there were so many transplants, like you're saying. I thought it was going to be more. I thought it would be more of a cultural shock, that it was going to be a lot more native. But I just see so many transplanted people here, too, that it really wasn't so much a cultural shock. I think the biggest shock for me is coming from, the weather that you're talking about. Georgia, but being kind of all that snow and everything, and changing to something where that just is not going to exist anymore. That was a shock in itself.
Yeah, and shorts and flip flops.
So to get used to that temperature,
Yep. Yeah. Do you know what we call evening dress around here, or formal dress around here?
No.
A pair of blue jeans and flip flops.
Okay.
That's formal dress. Because you will very seldom. I think I'm an oddity because I wear my cowboy boots and my blue jeans all the time, but you will mostly see people in shorts and flip-flops or shorts and sandals or women in pedal pushers and sandals or flip-flops. You don't see them in clothes like you do up north.
Yeah, I mean, well, for that heat, you know, I mean, you know, you want to be more comfortable. I can understand that, so. Definitely have like a long, more casual feel.
And we have
feel.
Two seasons. We have two seasons. We have snowbirds and no snowbirds.
Yeah, exactly.
You will know when they leave. You will know when
they
leave because they'll leave right after Easter or right after Mother's Day, and you'll go, where's all the traffic? I can get into a restaurant without a four-hour delay.
Yeah.
And then you'll know when they start coming back because you can't get through the grocery store, you can't get in a restaurant, and you can't drive on the street because they're crowded. So just remember, we have two seasons, the snowbirds and no snowbirds. So believe it or not, we're going to run out of time. So tell the folks where you can be found in case they want to get in contact with you, which I know they're going to want to.
Okay. I think the best thing is really head up to Amazon or just Google my name, Gary Starter, S-T-A-R-T-A. You'll find me that way definitely on Amazon. If you want to find some of my books via Barnes & Noble, you can do that too. This I Bought the Sun for the Dollar is also out in the Nook version, and I'm happy to say that my publisher will be putting out a print version of this book probably within 2 weeks. I'm excited about that because that's kind of like another way to get, you know, to reach people. I'm hoping to maybe contact some bookstores and see how that goes with that. I know, you know, there's always that battle, you know, some people preferring the paper over the electronic, and hopefully I can please both with that. So that's exciting. You mentioned, like, beginning the show, like, how global it is, and this publisher is, you know, out of Canada, and when people go to read this, they'll notice, like, old English spelling of some of the words, so they have, like, a, you know, that's another, like, kind of, like, a cultural thing going on with this, but I'm really interested that you say that people all over the world are listening to us, especially like in Egypt. I, as I told you in the last show, I'm really fascinated with Egypt and the pyramids. Some of my past books have definitely dealt with the pyramids and those mysteries. I will never not be fascinated by that either. So, you know, who knows? I might write about that again. I know for sure within the last few months I came up with an idea that I want to get back and do another book about robots. That's kind of like a passion for me. You said in the beginning of the show that I was influenced by Isaac Asimov, and I think I have something else where I might have something to say about robots, and I think that the audience for that may be more broad. I think I might do something that might also be kind of like a young adult or a teen type book in that regard. So, again, that's going to be new waters, treading new waters again. I just
Dressing
don't want
your
to really.
Mind.
Yeah, I don't want to stay in that same box, really. So, who knows?
Well, I know I asked you this at the last show, but I think it's important that people be told this over and over. It's like a reiteration because, you know, I believe in dreamers. Our whole universe is made up of dreamers. Without the dreamers, we wouldn't have the books. We wouldn't have the inventors. We wouldn't have the paintings. We wouldn't have cars. We wouldn't have telephones. We wouldn't have gas stations. We might not even have the printed word because they used to write things on papayas and on cave walls. So because I believe in dreamers and I believe that people should make their dreams real, what would you tell someone who has a dream but they're afraid to take that leap? I mean, we all have that little voice in the back of our head that says, you're not good enough, you can't do this. What do you tell someone that they need to take that
well,
leap.
That is funny because actually someone told me to take that leap, and that's how I got involved in writing the fiction. Because, as you said before, I was mostly nonfiction, writing as a reporter, and I never imagined myself doing fiction until someone really kind of actually pushed me in a way to do that. An actual person inspired me to take that leap, which I didn't want to make. I had a lot of doubts in my mind about coming up with stories, of changing to doing fiction, although I loved science fiction. And I had all these doubts running in the back of my mind until one day I plunged into it and just went for it. So if you really love it, I guess you just have to plunge into it. And maybe circumstances will happen where another person will encourage you to follow those dreams, talk about it with someone, and maybe they'll give you the courage to go ahead and do it. But I think it's funny because if that didn't happen, I probably wouldn't be doing this. I probably would be doing some writing. I don't know what, but...
And we would be so cheated.
I'm just so happy, that I found another way to write. Because, after I was a reporter, I didn't really think that was going to be in the cards for me. So I'm glad I could go back to what I think was my roots and what I'm meant to do.
Oh, absolutely. Because, Gary, you have an imagination that it gets scary up in there. I don't know how you get all those voices in a marching order to get what you get written, because I have enough scary voices in my head, but you've got them all over the map.
Yeah, isn't that weird how that works? I mean, I know anybody else who's out there writing fiction, and if they feel they can hear a character in their head. I think I said in the last show I had one I identified, and she was a female character of all things, Caitlin Diggs. I seem to identify with her as being a real person, and I can hear her. And how odd is that? That's strange.
No, I understand it because they won't shut up in my head either. They keep me awake at night. I want to put them in one setting. They don't want to be in that setting, so they just shut up. So I say, okay, where do you want to be? I mean, we'll go there, but you got to tell me. So, yeah, I understand about Caitlin Diggs. You're not done with her yet either, I'm sure.
No, I'm not, actually, because the one of the books I was talking about is going to, it's a reincarnation of her. It's down the road, and it's actually a clone of her that's going to be in another series that I think I'm proposing to do. At least I have one book in that regard. So it should be kind of Caitlin, but kind of not Caitlin.
She'll be Caitlin with an attitude is what she'll be. Well, we are getting down to the end of the show, and thank you so, so much for spending an hour with me. You don't know how grateful I am for you and the rest of my guests. Each one of you are so special, and I am just so honored that you agree to keep coming on this show and making my nights and writing books and making me think when I don't want to think. I like that.
Yeah, and this was kind of prophetic that you happened to pick this day. It was like I was just thinking I just met my girlfriend about a year ago this weekend. So that was like an anniversary thing. So kind of looking back on that too. So it's like all interconnected and funny how these things happen.
There is a purpose for everything, and everything happens for a reason. There is no coincidence. It is in that big picture. Ladies and gentlemen, we will be back on Wednesday night at 8 o'clock with a new month and new guest. I forgot to write the name down because it's been one of those days. I've been working on research all day. But join us on Wednesday night, and please go and get Gary's book. You can go as soon as we get done here. You can let your little fingers do the walking and go get his new book and get all the rest of his books, because this man is one fantastic author. If you don't, you will kick yourself. And as I say at the close of every show, we only go around once. Do not be that person that lays on their deathbed and said shoulda, woulda, coulda. If you've got a dream, a passion, a platform, a business you want to start, grab it. Run with it like you stole it, because you are important. And so on that note, leave you until Wednesday night at 8 o'clock, we say goodnight. So hang on, Gary. All right. You know what I will do when the show goes up, when we get off from here and it goes up into archives, I'll put it on my my page, tag you in it, and take it with it. And then in the morning, I will put the rest of them up on all the podcasts and put the podcast up on my page and tag you and send them all out there. And again, you are so gracious. And welcome to Florida.
Yeah. We're glad you're here. And thank you again for having me. Yeah. Where exactly are you?
I'm on the East Coast. I'm over in Port St. Lucie. I'm between Daytona and Fort Lauderdale.
I'm on the Treasure Coast. Yeah.
You're 3.5 hours as the crow flies. You're 3.5 hours from me.
Wow. Well, it's amazing how big the state is, though. That's a long.
It takes longer to go north and south than it does east and west.
Yeah. I mean, even think about, you know, five from where I am down to the tip of Miami or something. That's a ways. That's like 5 hours, 6 hours. I don't know.
To Miami? No, you're about 4 hours to Miami. You're five hours.
Yeah.
You're 5 hours to Key West, and you should go to Key West.
Yeah, I keep telling myself I want to see that. Yeah.
Go down there because there is so much fodder for books down there. One of my books is set in Key West. The Pink Canary. It is set in Key West. Key West is one of my favorite cities. I love Key West.
All right.
So go down there and enjoy yourself. And you know you've got the university is right there where you are in Tampa.
Yeah, it's right down the street actually from where I'm sitting at tonight, USF.
Yep,
it's right down the street from where I am right now tonight.
You've got all kinds of good stuff over there. You've got Crystal Springs where the manatees come up, a Crystal River where the manatees come up in the wintertime and into the warmer waters. You've got Wikiwachi Springs over there. You've got Sarasota. They have a pirate fest over there. You've got Tarpon Springs, which is where they used to dive for sponges. The Greeks live there and dive for sponges. You've got Ringling Brothers Museum. You've got all kinds of stuff over there. So soak it. Oh, you've got Ybor City, too.
Yeah, you know what? And finally, I think I was telling you the last time that other novel I have, Dead Market, is based on that area. Yeah.
See? So you've got all kinds of, just in your area alone, you've got all kinds of things to see. And then south of you, you've got the Keys, and there is nothing more beautiful. And if you've never read Tim Dorsey, you should read Tim Dorsey because he has his own two characters, Coleman and Serge, and Serge is a serial killer, but he only kills bad people. And Tim Dorsey takes you on a trip of Florida in all of his books to out-of-the-way places where Serge and Coleman go, and they go to Key West quite a bit. So read him. He's got a new one out. But welcome to Florida, my friend. You'll love it.
Thank you, and thanks again for the help and help me get that word out there. And I'll look forward to, let me know about scheduling near end of March or beginning of April. That'll be great.
And I'll send you a date, and if that's not good for you, we'll set another one. But as soon as I get off the phone here, I'll look at my calendar and see what I'm pretty sure March is full, but I think April is just now filling up, so I think I can get you around the first week of April, but I'll just make sure.
I think that would be great because I think that's definitely I should have that book that we've been talking about out by then, so I think that's perfect. Yep.
And the hour flew by, and thank you again, my friend. It's wonderful having you in my life.
Yeah, take care. Thanks again for having me. I really appreciate it.
All right, darling. Talk to you later.
Okay, good night. Bye.
Good night.
Night. Bye.